Welcome back to the Living Well podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Martone. Today's episode will be all about women's health. If you're in perimenopause or menopause, I think today's episode will be particularly insightful for you. We're hosting OBGYN Ruchi Puri. I'm sitting here in my home this morning with one of my dear friends, Ruchi Puri. She's an OBGYN, a yogini, and also a teacher and a writer. And I feel very inspired by everything she has to share, so I feel grateful to have her here this morning. She's been delivering babies for over 20 years all over the world and has kind of transitioned into a different part of her career. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about that. I know you have a website now called Biology, and tell me about what you're focused on there.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Michelle. It's a real pleasure to be with you and also to support this new aspect of your career and evolution. So Biology started for me with finding a way to communicate the complexity of what it means to approach health holistically. I think there are a lot of words that we speak about, but we don't really know what they mean practically. And so I can say I want a holistic approach to my health, but what am I really saying by that? Like, what does that word break down into in practical terms? And there are many words like this in our language, like God, love, mindfulness. Like, these are actual processes that we really make a lot of assumptions about what they actually are when we go to execute them as a practice. And so I felt this word holistic fell into this bucket of things, and it needed more words to explain what it really means, especially when it comes to health. And so Biology really is meant to communicate what a holistic paradigm to health, wellness, well-being. Like, these are actually three separate things, which is why we have three separate words.
Tell me, Ruchi, what your definition of holistic is.
So my definition of holistic, I would say there's our experience of being, like being human, and it actually occurs in four unique dimensions. There's the physical dimension or the physical realm, which we know a lot about through medicine. But then there's an emotional dimension. This is like the realm of the heart, and not just the biologic functioning of the heart, but the part that says, this is what my heart longs for. I'm following my heart. I'm heartbroken. This is another capacity that happens in the heart. And this is another dimension of our experience. Just as there's the mental dimension, and I'm very careful to not use the word mind, because mind represents not just what happens mentally or psychologically. So the mental is where we take in information, we have beliefs, we have ideas, imagination. These are all the functions of the mental realm. The last dimension is that of the spiritual dimension and the soul. And as far as being is concerned, being is the fabric of all four of these dimensions together. And I think we can all agree that each dimension is a very unique aspect of our experience, whether we're talking about our inner world or outer world. But all four have their own unique expression in us. And we're the culmination of all four. And this is what it means to be. And then Biology is this understanding of being.
What are you feeling inspired by currently? What's some of the work you're doing these days?
Yeah, I turned 50 this year. And so I'm going through perimenopause now. And it's very alive for me personally. And I've come to realize that teaching from one's own experience it's very different than teaching about an idea or concept. And so I find myself now stepping in as I'm entering menopause and going through my own menopausal transition, that this is really alive, and how I'm now going through it myself versus what I've taken away from patients over the last 20 years as I've met women going through this transition. I'm realizing that it is not at all the same as what I studied in medical school, what I got out of my training, and what culture is telling me about it. So I'm finding that as I'm going through my process, I'm like clarifying and shifting my perspective about the nature of menopause and the reproductive cycle of a woman's life.
Tell me about your perspective on menopause, because last night we were talking and you said something that really stuck in my mind about moving from a chrysalis and blossoming into a butterfly. And I love the way that you have a different spin on what menopause is. It's not like you're losing something or drying up or, you know, losing some sort of importance in society, but you're transitioning into a more beautiful role.
So it's occurred to me first that just like there's this assumption that childbirth is miserable, there's this assumption that menopause is miserable, or when you go into puberty and you get breasts and start having a period, that that's something to be ashamed of, that we have culturally a lot of stigma and almost a derogatory attitude to many of these major initiations that we step through during the course of our cycle as women. And here, I want to be very clear, this is wrong. It's not only a misunderstanding, but it's just completely inaccurate. And I think when we can zoom out and shift perspective on the totality of a woman's life, that we see that she's moving through a cycle that's beautiful, it's natural. Each stage in the cycle, each threshold you cross over, whether it's puberty, your first sexual experience, a pregnancy, childbirth, motherhood, menopause, these are all moments of celebration. Even if in the process there's a bittersweetness that something's ending as something new is beginning. So I think there's something about changing our perspective of how we relate to menopause to begin with. And what I've come to understand is that, you know, what is it that's changed? Like, it's clear when you're going into puberty and you're going from being a girl to a woman, it's really clear. But then what's the shift that when you're leaving kind of this stage of being able to birth human life and that comes to an end and you're entering something new, what's the value there? And, you know, we all know, like, women have been objectified, we've been about our looks, like, being a young woman is more powerful culturally in terms of being wanted and desired than being an older woman. So these are all the biases and the stigmas. But when I really see what's happening for a woman when she's leaving that stage of birthing life, she enters a stage where her entire life experiences up to that moment are really being asked to up-level into supporting life grow and supporting what she's birthed and created in her life. And from here, I think there's some very major shifts that we're moving from.
What do you see some of those shifts being?
First, we're learning to outgrow surviving and shifting into thriving. Like, a survival state is very different from a thriving state. The other place that I think we're learning to shift is when you're in a survival state, you're reacting to life a lot of times. Like, I just got to do this to get this to move ahead. And that's a kind of chronic level of stress that we've learned to adapt to and normalize. But this isn't a sustainable life at the end of the day. So learning to shift from a reactive mode to responsive mode, learning to shift from surviving to thriving, this to me is the metamorphosis of going from a caterpillar to a butterfly. It's taking my life experience from the first part of my life, all the things that worked, the things that didn't work, the things that were painful, the things that were like amazing, but I might not know ever again, that we're taking that information, we're integrating it, and then it's becoming part of our wisdom. And so for me, going more from pre-menopause into menopause is stepping into the threshold of wisdom. But in order for me to step into wisdom, I have to integrate both what worked and what didn't in my life. And I think this is why perimenopause is so uncomfortable for many women, because we see what we're losing, but we don't see what we're gaining.
What have you seen yourself gaining as you're going through this transition?
Yeah, I think first of all, I came to recognize that it doesn't have to be miserable. In fact, I had met many women in the office that I'd asked about, well, how are your periods doing? How are this is going? And it's like so seamless for them. And then other women, it's like an existential crisis. And so I had to first notice that what's my relation? I really realized that the more I could relate to it as with curiosity to see, well, what is actually in store for me here? Where's the past repeating itself again as a pattern that's like actually something I need to outgrow? And so this is where I see my transition, like that I'm growing more comfortable in my skin and learning to trust myself more. And gaining more confidence. So the piece around trust and confidence, I didn't have as a young woman. But that's part of now, as I've been doing a lot of my own personal growth, working through the painful pieces of my childhood, experiences that I had professionally, what I witnessed as a doctor around the world, leaning into my pain points, things that I were noticing about how my body was changing, that I'm needing to eat different, I'm needing a different kind of lifestyle for myself now. All these things that I was doing from a very survivalistic stress state, that I'm having more curiosity and confidence that I can change those things and really up-level my life. But it's taking time. And I think this is why perimenopause takes years, because you can't, you know, digest all the stuff that you've been pushing, shoving under the rug or pushing away, putting it in the junk drawer, that room in the back of the house. You can't just open it and expect it to like clean itself up in like a few minutes. It's a time of introspection and processing. And yeah, of course, there are painful bits in it. But learning to be in a caring relationship with the pain takes time, because you have to cultivate a capacity in yourself for that. But there, from that perspective, menopause seems very different for me. And also, from a scientific perspective, we see that aside from, you know, one, it's a transition. So some of the hiccups that are going on with yourself physically, they don't stay that way for the most part.
In your experience as an OBGYN, you've seen hundreds, thousands of patients. What are some of the things you've seen that have made a difference in women who are going through menopause to bring, I don't know, a little bit more ease to the transition?
A lot of the practices around changing how you eat, getting more rest, de-stressing, mindfulness practices, yoga practices seem to make a huge difference. And ironically, those practices help you become more self-respect, introspective, and curious and reflective. And these are all the movements that we see when healing happens, moving from the sympathetic stress state to a parasympathetic rest and digest state. And that's when healing and integration happens. So I think this kind of supports my premise that biologically we're given a phase of slowing down to make these changes in our lives, to step into wisdom, like that we need some things that catalyze this process for us.
I know you recently took some time off and some time for yourself to take a pilgrimage through India. Can you tell us about your trip and what your drive was?
5 or 6 years ago, I started to feel very exhausted with feeling powerless a lot of the times. As women, I think being born female, we kind of each inherit a piece of the collective trauma in the feminine, of being marginalized, being inferior, not being treated equally when it came to education, socioeconomics, an entire generation that needed a man in order to survive in society. These are huge cultural constraints on an entire gender. And I never had this question, was like, were we healing something? Are we evolving towards equality? Like, was equality broken, or is this part of the human evolution between gender to grow into a healthy union between between the sexes? And coming from India and studying Vedanta, being exposed to this rich polytheistic pantheon of many gods and goddesses, and it's all very freaking confusing. And so I in our culture, in many of the Eastern cultures, the sacred feminine is actually revered, even though culturally women are denigrated. And this paradox, this polarity, was very confusing for me. And so I stumbled on a story of Lord Shiva's first wife, Sati, and kind of what happened to her, what happened to this union, and where in this story, Sati gets disrespected. The sacred feminine and the material creation of life that we see in the universe also gets denigrated, and she leaves. She says, if you can't respect me, you're not ready, and she leaves. And so Lord Shiva loses his love of his life, his companion in creation. He goes into this despair, and when she leaves, her body is destroyed, but the pieces of her body end up in what are called these Shaktipeeths, or seats of power, and that are scattered around. Some people say they're 50 or 51. Some people say they're 108. But these sacred sites are scattered through South Asia. So they're in India, Tibet, Nepal, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka today. And so that was my pilgrimage, and it was really an opportunity for me to have an experience of the sacred feminine and to immerse myself in what that really means, what the quality of this is. Why is the Devi so revered, even if the woman is so disrespected? And to kind of step into my own experience of what is this Shakti all about? If I'm feeling so disempowered in my life, how do I turn to the origin of power and Shakti to embody this in my life? So that was the trip.
And who did you see visiting these temples? Was it mostly women, or were there families and also men?
Yeah, it was amazing. Even in some of the most remote places, I went, in Nepal, primarily what we would say are Hindus, but people from thousands of people, some places like in Kamakya Devi Temple, thousands of people are going there per day. Vaishno Devi in the Jammu Kashmir region, has 11 million visitors per year to make this 14-kilometer trek up to the top of the mountain where the cave of Vaishno Devi is. So in a way, there's a lot of devotion and pilgrimage to these sites. And there's also a lot of confusion. And it was like a whole process to really research and see how chaotic it all was. Like, the information is chaotic and it's, you know, really enveloped in what we would call Maya or ignorance around what the sacred feminine is and what it means. But there's a devotion towards it. And each place I went to kind of revealed an aspect or a quality of the sacred feminine. And I started to touch the complexity of life. And I realized, well, no wonder nobody's written a book about it, because it's like, you know, it would be an explanation of everything that we see in the universe. I mean, you know, no wonder we reduce these things into, we need to reduce them into something more simplistic, like holistic or God or love, because really the nature of it is so, so much to take in. So then like that, it was very profound, journey, of feeling the nature of creation through the feminine and what, a woman is carrying with her through her life, and even her role, like that each of us is this active, not just creation, but the evolution of life happening through each of us, which, going back into perimenopause and menopause, makes sense that whatever that homework or baggage or weight that I'm carrying, whether it's in my personal life or my inheritance from my family or my community, that I have some little piece that my soul is here to bring a wisdom about, a healing for. And then we need a proactive process for that. It's not gonna just happen willy-nilly. Like, you know, it doesn't work that way.
Being able to go to a place where you feel you're honoring the sacred feminine is incredible. How can we do this in our daily life here? What are practices or ways of honoring the sacred feminine in our own lives, also in our communities?
Like, there's one quality of the feminine, and that is she always stays. It's painful, it's pleasant, it's happy. That's like the embodiment of a mother's love. She always stays with the child. She always loves the child unconditionally, no matter what the child does or doesn't do, she stays. And this is the essence of the feminine, and this is the essence I think there's a confusion that Shakti is power, but really Shakti is the power of love, which is to bring together. And here, this quality of staying and being with, however it is, and keeping a relationship, this is what we can do. But here we need some skills, you know, and I think having this wisdom that comes from many of the world's long-standing spiritual traditions, where that knowledge stream can support being with the polarization of right and left, liberal, conservative, all these identities of being gay, being straight, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, this quality to be present, to be curious, to witness, to attune, to come into presence. These are the qualities that of love, of the feminine, that we can bring in our day to day.
Beautiful. So if people want to learn more about the work that you're doing or work with you, where can they find you?
They can just find me at www.ruchipuri.com. And so all my writing and programs around helping support women have a healthy menopause using a holistic approach are all on there. And, you know, it's not just like there's a role for the medicines, there's the medications that your doctor can prescribe for you to deal with transient symptoms. But then I think there's also this opportunity to go deeper and be in a reconciliation process to learn how to move from this reactive to responsive, to from surviving to thriving, embodiment practices that I think are really important if we do want to kind of flourish and meet our potential. So, and I think we need a community to do that, and people to support us in that journey. It's there isn't a pill for that at the end of the day.
That's great. I love you so much. Thank you for chatting with me.